Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's start here. You don't get, or you don't, people's writing. You don't get meat and marry in one day. He didn't, so I guess calm down. Many people confirm that he went to New U 4 months after the children were buried. You often do not have the facts. I guess he went to New U. Shit, I was saying York all this time. The four-month claim is true. Public records show Patrick moved to Manhattan in May 23 and took a job at Microsoft. Yes, and here's what the facts say. He took a job at Microsoft, and 3 years later, he got married.
Isn't it amazing? You move to a city after a horrendous event to get away from that horrendous event, and you might meet someone in that city.
You meet somebody? Oh my! This is what I don't understand about people on this whole damn thing. So he takes a new job. He's trying to restart his life after taking basically a finding himself trip overseas. It was like, oh, he went on a vacation, like he's on like some sort of like Sandals Beach or something. He was staying in hostels, so he didn't have to see families and children. And basically, I think, I don't know, if it were me, I'd be debating of whether or not I'm coming back alive.
Let's thought experiment this one. Yeah. I like experimenting with this one. So let's for the sake of this say that, all right, we think Patrick actually did this intentionally, and that he's actually behind this in some way, or he actually did something because he actually had the mistress on the side, so he's actually the culprit behind her. All right, so let's say that's actually true for the sake of this thought experiment. If that was true, what would be the most advantageous testimony he could provide? Would it be the testimony that might actually at some point allow his former wife out after her therapy, potentially? Or would he paint her as a picture of someone who is a horrible mother with psychotic breaks, not with psychotic breaks all the time, that's pre-planned, she's horrendous, I did everything I could get away from her, I couldn't do it. In other words, how would he paint her? Would he paint her as a monster, or would he paint her in a picture of someone who actually needs help, and be congruent with everyone else?
That's an interesting take, Robin. That kind of debunks it all
What serves him? So if he did this action for himself, that means all actions would be self-serving. Yeah. So if that is the case, how is it self-serving, the testimony he gave on her behalf? It's not.
It's not.
It's her serving, not him self-serving. Yeah. So...
done. Let's go back to the relationship for a second. I don't know when they first started dating. Yes, he moved to New York 4 months later to start a new job. That is fact. And he got married 3 years later. What exactly do people want him to have done? What would have been okay by the TikTokers for him to, if he meets? Let's just say, I don't know when he met the new wife, but let's just say 4 months in, 5 months in, a year in, whatever. He's at his new job in a new city, trying to start a new life, mourn the loss, and go through an incredible amount of grief that most of us, thank God, will never have to contemplate ever feeling. When is it okay for him to, if he meets someone, to let them into his life And then maybe it does turn romantic at some point. Should he just say, no, I'm sorry, TikTokers say this is too soon. I'm desperately really want some sort of connection with a human being as I'm going through this, but TikTok says it's too much. I mean, what the...
So I'm gonna have to put on a big conjecture hat on this one because we weren't in the courtroom, but I've seen some accounts of the 911 call recently today of people that were in the courtroom actually listened and actually heard the 911 call. And I'm going to play that and I'm going to bring this in a second, because to answer the question, what would it take for someone to accept that from him remarrying or finding someone in his life again? For those people, from what you have seen from him now, I don't think it would be anything, because they think he's guilty no matter what. So they're always going to have data and confirmation bias for any action he takes, which is going to be against Patrick. So there's nothing that he could do or any time period or anything like that. Because if you compare and contrast the people in the courtroom and how they testified, they were looking for something more from the father that lost his children and whose wife is on trial. They're looking for an emotional difference in what they saw. Now, here's my theory and conjecture on this. From what I understand, the reaction in the courtroom and the jury was to the playing of the 911 call, of the blood-curdling, never heard before screams emanating from him from seeing and witnessing what he witnessed that day. That's the compelling figure and emotion they're expecting on the bench, in the witness box that they didn't see. I would theorize if more people had heard that, this theory wouldn't be the same.
Yeah.
Because they actually saw the raw emotion. I think, as Siobhan said on our show when we talked about this and talked about Patrick, when people go through, I mean, seriously, think about this. Could you fully embrace that moment for the rest of your life? Are you going to go through therapy, or even if not in therapy, try to compartmentalize that and shut it out because the pain, I can't even fathom. I can't even, you know, my son's about to be deployed, and even the thought of what we've had to go through with insurance, if something happens, I mean, it's devastating, the mere thought of it. And three, one day your babies and your wife lost her shit. The amount of compartmentalization of the emotion you had that day to be able to function today and still live is got to be, it's got to, I can't even imagine the compartmentalization he's got to go through. So what everyone saw was not the emotion he felt that day. What everyone saw is emotion he has to try to feel now to move forward. And so you are blaming him for trying to survive. I don't think that's very just.
I don't either. I really wonder if that 911 call had been played for the world to hear, if we would be having this conversation about Patrick.
Just I heard of it.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Is that part of the absence? You know, because that's what people like to do, Robin. They like to fill in the blanks when they don't have the information with whatever conjecture they, you know, fits their narrative. And that's a big blank for a lot of people. And a lot of people have been taking the transcript basically of the call. We have that, but we don't have the emotion behind it. And a lot of people are taking some of the words that are said in that phone call and reading them very differently. When it comes to the line about the kids, she killed, and I apologize if I'm misinterpreting where the word F comes right in here.
Yep.
She killed the effing kids or something of that nature. Any way you put the F in there, to me, it reads about the same. And a lot of people are going, he's referring to the kids with the word effing. I wouldn't refer to my kids with the word effing in there. If I had been in that situation and my ex had done that, I probably would. Not because I'm speaking disparaging about the children, but because I'm in shock. Because what she had threatened to do, what she had talked about having weird ideations about doing for months on end, but never had a plan to do, actually was carried out. And I just got home and it was a good day. What the F just happened here? She killed the effing kids.
There'd be wobbles reported about him from friends, family, in-laws.
I just don't see how that's a weird statement on the part. I mean, it tracks to me.
Yeah, especially if you have it the context as was being described by others. It wasn't just a placid, well, you know, she killed the effing kids.
No,
it was emotional destruction happening in that moment.
Yeah.
And that's what, I mean, because again, do your thought experiment, and you can't because it's that's gruesome. Three babies and your wife.
Yeah. I would be, explicitives would be flying in places where they don't make sense.
I just even think, this is not a performative emotion. I mean, when you think about that, you just like, you can become speechless, shockless. I mean, you're trying to express. I mean,
I might just be sitting in the corner saying F over and over. You know, I don't know that I would be making much coherent sense.
I'm with you. It's unfathomable. It's completely emotionally unfathomable. So since it's emotionally unfathomable, it's hard to imagine the emotions he would have or anyone would have.
One more.
But here's what I know they weren't. Again, 911 calls are so important. I'm good friends with a few people that actually studied them at the PhD level. And I said it before too, you know, look at 911 calls on any other case we've covered where the perpetrator is actually the one that called the 911 call. Typically, not 100%, but typically 95 to 98% of them, they are more focused on their actions, on what they were doing leading up to that, and being very descriptive. Oh my God, I just got home. I just came back from, I mean, this is hypothetically, if he was potentially not innocent, you know, if he was guilty of this or somehow tied to this. Oh my God, I just got back from picking up our food for dinner for the kids. I left her alone. He'd be describing exactly what was going on rather than the explicative of the shock, the extreme shock he was experiencing. So in other words, he was in such shock of what he saw. There's no description he could cognate of anything that's going on except the trauma he's experiencing. People that have pre-planned, that have premeditation, and people that have been involved in some way are explaining their actions in it because, I know it's being recorded. I know they're going to be able to do this. So they got to explain away my actions as my own alibi.
I was at the gym. The door was locked. I broke it down. I don't know how she was stabbed 17
Ellen
times.
Greenberg. Yes, we were thinking of that exactly.
Not saying he did anything. Just saying it's a little weird. A little weird.
Saying your 911 call really sucked if you're innocent.
You want to hear a weird 911 call and get mad at somebody? Go take a listen to that case. Ellen Greenberg. Have fun. One more. This is another comment, and this is another interesting consensus that is gaining traction online. It stays on Patrick. I'm sorry, Patrick. We're just breaking our way through it. I think Patrick is weak. That is not a crime. If he had been stronger, he would have gotten her the help she needed. He wanted the perfect life to come back and stuck his head in the sand. He will have to live with this and must feel guilt. Peace to all concerned. So many people failed Lindsay, including Patrick. What Patrick did per testimony. Okay, here's what has actually been on the record. He called Jolotta with Lindsay on December 15th, 2022 to say it was her worst day, and she was at Mass General ER that night. On December 30th, he called South Shore Hospital to arrange McLean. She was admitted January 1st and stayed 5 days. He testified he checked in on her every morning. Jolotta testified that she raised a bipolar disorder with a couple, and Patrick said, "My wife is not bipolar." That's on the record. It's fair to weigh. And for whatever, you know, people sometimes don't like accepting hard diagnoses. It is what it is. I would call it human. But I wouldn't call that he wasn't there for his wife.
Well, it's not reported anywhere. I mean, that's the easiest thing on any of these things. It's easy since we have a trial here. There hasn't been any testimony by prosecution people or defense people, whether medical professionals, friends, family, in-laws, again, go down the list. There hasn't been one individual that testified that said he didn't do all he could, that he wasn't part of it, that he was unaware of these things, that he was dismissive, that he was a culprit. Yeah. Everyone said, they either said nothing or they said he did everything he could have. I mean, it's...
There's no doctors that said, don't leave her alone. Now one could make the argument and say, maybe you should have made that call yourself. Maybe you should have erred on the side of caution and said, I'm not leaving you alone. I agree. You know, but
sure, he
again,
says that right now to himself every day.
I'm sure every fucking second of the day he says
and
that.
And everyone
to
else that knows him. And think about that too. You think about, you know, let's go back to his affect right now. So not only has to compartmentalize the horror he witnessed that day so he can live on, but the other part of it is he's got to live with that guilt.
Yeah.
And it's unfounded guilt, but it's guilt that every survivor faces. He's got, can you imagine the survivor guilt he has? Not just of the three kids, but of all this that's coming down on him, that you should have done more for your wife. How do you live with that and not compartmentalize? Cowards take the easy way out with S.
Yeah.
I give him a lot of credit for not. It takes a lot of bravery to go on every single day right now facing these nutters out there and having to face not just nutters. You're facing the loss of your three children. You're facing the fact that he's living with survivor guilt and he's asking himself. So for all these people that are pounding on him, you think he's not doing that every day of his life to himself?
It's a good point. You know, we've talked about Lindsay a lot, and I've said many a times, I will be surprised if she's around a year from now, because unless they keep her on S watch pretty tight, which I know they certainly have leading up to this trial to make sure she gets to the trial. But I kind of theorize a little bit like, well, once the trial is done and there's not this incessant need to keep her here for the trial, and sometimes that gets a little more lax, I don't know that she's going to be around. Patrick, though, I don't think I would have made it to the trial. Honest to God, I don't know. I would have had if I had three kids, this happened, I don't know I would have had the strength to go start a new job in 4 months. I mean, some people can, some people can't, and it's not an indictment on him. Maybe I could if I compartmentalize it. I'd be a very unhealthy person, but if that's what you got to do to live, that's what you got to do to live. I don't know that I could have done it, but I know that I would have made it. The fact that he's alive is kind of amazing.
It is, because here's another thing, you know, when it comes to his testimony and why he testified on behalf of her as well, because, I mean, in my own, you know, placing myself in their own situation, do you think he's blaming her or himself more?
I don't know.
I mean, because if he feels he failed her to recognize these things...
I don't know if there's a more there or if it's just a constant...
All of it. Just all of it.
Dull, horrific pain that will never go away for every day of his life. And then when he logs online right now to do anything, he's seeing his name come up, being connected with doing the most horrific thing that's ever happened to him. Yeah. And that's got to be hell. I mean, it's re-victimizing somebody, and it's really sick. It's sick. I don't know any other word for it.
I don't even have a word to describe it, because it's inhuman. What you're doing to another human being, where there's absolutely zero evidence. As a matter of fact, all the evidence is contrary to everything you're saying out of your mouth, and you're intentionally trying to inflict and incite pain against another human being. I mean, ask yourself.
I think
that.
That's the disconnect, though, Rob. I don't think people are connecting. Oh, there's a human being at the end of this. Because oftentimes
you're purposely inciting pain on them.
But oftentimes, if we're coming across on a screen to someone, we're not living. We're not human. People then feel the ability to say things they wouldn't necessarily say to someone if you're walking down the street. So I think you have that disconnect going on too. And it becomes a sideshow.
You have all these great ideas. You're not smarter than all the investigators and the attorneys that handled this. I guarantee you're not. You didn't come up with some wild thing that no one thought of and that they've been working on for the last 3 years. You're not that smart. I'm sorry. I'm not that smart. And we've been covering this. No, I don't know anyone that's smart. And it has nothing to do with smarter or intelligent or not. You just don't have the same access to the raw data and information that they do. So shush.
Well, here's a thought, though, and I guess why do some people feel empowered that they do feel like they believe that they have this sort of information? Because in completely unrelated cases, there are times where the person sitting at home does know what the hell's going on better than what an investigation says. But then they're judging all cases by that prism. And by that investigation, and every single one is different. It's all confirmation biases all coming through, and then there's a lot of projection going on too in this one, which makes it the lovely cornucopia of chaos that it is.
You know, as everyone knows, I read a lot, and there's a great book out there called The Courage to be Disliked. And in the book, The Courage to be Disliked, they tackle one of the hardest things each of us has as a human being, And that is the realization that you're just average. You're not special. You don't have a special thought or idea or anything else. You know what? In the span of the people existing on this planet today and throughout the history of our species, sorry to say, you are just average. And to think that you actually came up with some wild-ass theory that makes you special, nah. We're all just average. We're all just doing the best we can, trying to support each other, trying to figure things out, trying to make the world a better place. But in reality, no matter how hard each of us does this, Tony, me, my wife, my amazing kids, who I think are more than average, but you know what? In reality, I think they're above average. They're excellent. But in reality of life, in the span of our species, no, we're all just pretty damn average. So get over yourself.
Nobody's special. That's the message today from Robin.
Special today. Sorry. No one's special today.
That's Robin's new book. Nobody's special.
Nobody's special. The follow-up to It's Not All About Me is Nobody's Special.
Can you tell a theme here?
With a foreword by Fred Rogers.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but you know you're not special.
This is like the most down thing you've ever said.
But it's a reality check. It's true. Really, it's my daily reality. You know, it's a great book, but it's also a great message to remind yourself, don't, and this is the theme of it, don't fall in love with your own voice.
It's true. I had that basically mentally beat into me growing up. I think I spent most of my adult life trying to go, maybe I'm a little special. Maybe I...
Don't tell your mother. Some mothers say no matter what, you are special.
But I can tell you, my upbringing was the opposite of you're special. It's you're pretty average. There's nothing special.
I think it was Dave McCullough's son, and I can't remember his name. Dave McCullough, the great history writer that wrote the book 1776, Benjamin Franklin. No, not Benjamin Franklin. That was another great author. Truman. John Adams, I mean, great history writer of American history. It was his son that got up at the high school graduation, or it might have been college graduation. No, I think it's high school graduation. And he actually went through the stats of everyone graduating that day, of all the valedictorians across the country, of all the great things all you did. And he said, you know what? As special as everyone's saying you are today, you're all just average.
I love it.
So get a grip on reality, folks, and ask yourself, is what I'm about to say going to help or hinder someone else in their path and their journey? And are you causing pain or comfort in someone else? And do you really need to say that? And are you being a me-former or an informer?
It's a good filter to run anything through before it hits the comments section.
We'll try.
So think of that before you drop them in there. Links are in the description. Substack, YouTube, go check them out. Robin's latest book, it's this one right here. It's Not All About Me. Go check it out. Amazon, leave a review. Until next time, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
We got one more segment here to have a conversation about, and it's Patrick Clancy. He lost all three of his children on the same night. If you go on TikTok for a little while, you'd think he's a murderer running the streets in the dark wearing a mask. No, he lost all three of his children. He's a victim here too. He found his wife at the base of their house after she jumped from a second story window. These are just facts. He has since divorced. He has remarried. He moved to New York, and a significant portion of the internet has decided he's the one who should be on trial. It seems to start out, because I'm trying to wrap my mind around this. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author with us, and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. As I try to wrap my mind around this, I'm trying to go from the beginning. Like, where do we get off the rails here? Where does Patrick become the villain in this case? Because I was very surprised when I first heard about this a couple weeks ago of people going down this road. And I think it kind of begins, at least for me, you tell me, Siobhan, of people trying to define what appropriate grief looks like, of which there is no such thing. There's no appropriate grief. But a lot of people seem to really think they know what it is, and they're not afraid to tell you that accepting a job in New York 4 months after your children died is very inappropriate because you might meet somebody there and 3 years later you might get married, mm-hmm. to which he did. Oh my mm-hmm. God. Then he also went on a trip. He went on a, like, when I read about the trip, people are like, oh, he went on a vacation. No, he didn't go on a cruise. He didn't go to sandals. It sounds very much like a soul seeking. I, quite honestly, when I read about where he went, I believe it was Costa Rica originally. Then he was staying in hostels in Europe, mm-hmm. because he didn't want to be around families because he couldn't stand the sight of it. Mm-hmm. So this to me sounds like a soul finding trip, or you might find him out dead in a woods somewhere, yeah. because he's decided he's had enough. It could have gone either way. That was inappropriate as well, because he left a review about a hike he went on. Oh my God, it was a hike that was peaceful for him after the living hell he's gone through. Somehow these are all horrible things. Where do you think this goes off the rail? Is it because people just are never satisfied with how someone grieves, so we must make them into a villain when it's not congruent to everyone else, or how one would handle such a horrific situation if it happened to them? God forbid.
God forbid. Yeah, this is, folks. And this has disappointed me in humanity, again, reading those things. I've just had to stay off Instagram because yeah. it's just flooded with it. As we've spoken, it's a lot of trying to turn him into a monster. Or the other group is trying to turn Lindsay into a monster. As we've said, there are no monsters here. And it's tragic because this is the kind of thing a therapist would suggest. Get away. Change your scene, because if you're staying, let's say he's staying in the home, staying in the town where this happened, he's going to be perseverating and never be able to get this out of his mind. I mean, I'm sure every day, most moments of the day, certainly at this point, this is in his mind. And clinically, these are all good things. Take a trip. Yeah. Rediscover the meaning of life for you after this, you know, the life that you thought you had was shattered. And yeah. it's a therapeutic thing to do. It's a healthy thing to do. And certainly finding a person who is healthy, who is comforting to you, who has compassion for you, that's also good therapy. So I find this urge to punish him, it's sadistic, and it really disappoints me in people.
That I'm so glad to hear you say that's what a therapist would recommend, because I thought about this yesterday. It's not just him witnessing and seeing and being part of the loss of his three children and, to a large extent, the loss of his wife. I can't imagine, and help me understand how he can even deal with survivor's guilt on this one.
Yeah. Because I'm amazed he's alive, quite honestly.
I mean, seriously, so, because no one's even talking about what he must be going through, not just on witnessing what he saw when he walked in there and lost his shit, as we have heard through people in the 911 call.
People are going on him for that, too, because he said the F word in front of the kids. But, oh, no.
But can you imagine the survivor's guilt of him saying to himself, what could I have done? What should I have done? I shouldn't have done this. All the what ifs going through the mind of what he lost and blaming himself for that. Yeah. I mean, it's just mind boggling to even think Tony was saying, how he's still alive.
Here's the ignorance.
How's the therapist, how do you deal mm-hmm. with that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, literally. Okay, Siobhan, tell me. You have a patient that's coming to you to see you for regular sessions, and they say this: Patrick may not have been directly involved, but he basically abandoned his family. He never helped Clancy with the kids and conveniently went on trips. This is the line of shit I keep seeing from everywhere.
That's why he's got
which by the way, can all be debunked pretty quick if you take 2 seconds to just educate yourself rather than just spew the venom that you're hearing online. Juvenile 69. Lindsay struggled alone for a long time. This is like the facts that they believe they have, when reality is completely different. He was there helping her. Did he go on a business trip? Yes. Holy shit, he did. There was also two mothers that were there helping with her and the kids. He was not out gallivanting around
the city.
Bull
said he's a great guy.
like what the fuck? I mean, yeah. I'm just, people grab onto this shit and then they put a narrative of who he yeah. is and they believe it. So yeah. again, you're sitting there, it's time for the appointment. I come in and I tell you, and I'm enraged. Oh my God, did you hear this, Siobhan? Yeah. And I spew off that bullshit to you. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to me as the patient coming in going, ha?
Yeah, where I would go, speaking as a therapist with someone like that, and as a therapist, you can't beat people over the head with, you know, the alternate point of view. You have yeah. to question them
yeah.
and tell me the story of your life that that makes you think that this is true.
Yeah, the answers come.
Yeah, what man has treated you badly? Let's do your own relationship history here.
Yep.
Because
yep.
clearly you're angry, and that anger is coming from somewhere within you. So let's go there. Let's go a little deeper, and then let's say we got some material. And we spend some time talking about all the ways that this person had been wronged by men and how come they have so much. Because a lot of it is just anger at men, you know.
It's
men
unresolved, right? I mean,
it's unresolved stuff.
Yeah. Start with, why we see? Let's discover your life arc.
Yeah, I mean, is that what, exactly. I mean, is that why we're seeing so much of this and why it doesn't, and there's nothing that can really penetrate it? There's nothing like facts don't seem to matter when you're like, yeah. no, that's completely inaccurate.
Yeah.
Because the inside, it's not even about Lindsay Clancy. It's not about Patrick Clancy. It's about oneself if they're going down this road. And if it's unresolved, it's still going to be unresolved. And is it just like a roadblock and they're incapable of seeing things a different way because they're too caught up in their own shit? Like in a way that's just non-penetrable. I mean, I'm trying to wrap my mind around some of it.
Yeah. No, I think you nailed it. It can be impenetrable, and people are telling themselves stories to make sense of things, but the stories are coming from their own motivated reasoning, because that's how they're getting through life, is by yeah. telling these stories. And often they have a victim story about how they were victimized. They haven't resolved that. They're still enraged. And then they see this and they project that, you know, Patrick is a monster, which, as you say, the facts do not support this in any way. No, nobody has indicated that, right? All the people we've talked to or we've heard testimony from, nobody has indicated that Patrick was a cruel husband, a neglectful husband. And I go back to this point, which I have seen time and time again. Families are not trained to recognize severe mental illness. They may know something's wrong. They may have empathy. They encourage the person, well, go to therapy and get help, but the therapist never invites them in to say, what are you seeing? So that's where you get the failure on the therapist side.
Yeah.
But there's just a lack of insight and a lot of projection going on. And so that's where I would start, is let's talk about where your anger is really coming from.
Yeah.
And then think about this. Again, I know people like this are rejecting the facts and data and details. If there was any inkling that they thought Patrick was less than the husband he needed to be, who do you think, under testimony, would have been the first people to throw him under the bus? Lindsay's parents.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much. They didn't.
Yes.
Plus everyone else. Because yeah. it would have been a scapegoat to help her mm-hmm. get off.
Very
and
much.
They didn't. And that says, to me, again, when you look at that circle of people around you, it just says it all to me.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Bitter Black 3014 said he seemed way more supportive than most, actually. That was my reaction, too.
That was my reaction,
too. I'm like, she seems like a pretty grounded dude.
Yeah.
Like I've seen far worse husbands. Like,
oh,
he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's not even, like, on a bad scale. It's like, he's on the good scale over here. Mm-hmm. Like, he's limited because he's, like anyone would be, because he's not a mental health professional.
Right.
That's most people. Right. So... Right. He's doing the best with what information he has. Yeah. And it seemed he put up with a lot of shit and dealt with a lot of stuff for those years of postpartum depression that she was going through, an undiagnosed bipolar. Yes. I'm honestly kind of surprised he didn't get divorced years earlier out of the stress of this marriage that might have been going on there. But the fact that he's there, he's forgiven her, he's still standing by her side. I mean, he could be, again, he could be the biggest devil in the world to her if he wanted to be. He could be on the stand saying, let her burn, and not basing any of his opinions on mental health awareness or facts or understanding. He could just be, screw it, I don't accept any of it. You killed the kids, burn her, and let me encourage you all to send her to the fiery pits. Yeah. But he's not. He's saying, please have grace. If he's the one who did this and doesn't want to be caught, don't you think he'd be up there on the stand encouraging her to go off to the eternal flames?
That's just logic. That's just logic, isn't it? And one of the things that I see people keep coming up, you know, at some point when I believe it was Rebecca Gelada raised the possibility of bipolar disorder. So there's another one that said bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
And he said, my wife's not bipolar. That is classic for families. I have had to go through that with families many times. When you say, I'm afraid your teenage son is developing schizophrenia. Oh, that can't be. That can't be. That can't be. When I had my one severe case of crisis postpartum psychosis that I had in my office, and the first thing I did was call in the husband from work, call in her parents, call in her sister, and sat with all of them and said, I am seeing something really serious here. It looks like psychosis. Everyone in the room said, oh, no. She's just anxious. She's always been anxious. It can't be something like that. And people respond strongly to hearing that their loved one has a major mental illness, and they don't want to believe that.
Yeah.
So again, that isn't him trying to sabotage her or not listening. That's a typical response from families.
Yes, that's the normal response you're going to get.
Yes.
It's bipolar? Yes! Like, nobody's going to do that.
No.
And I'll tell you, you know my first impression when I started seeing his testimony of what he was doing as a husband? I'm going to project and be with my own transparency. I was like, holy crap, I need to be a better husband. And everyone would tell you, I was like, wow, I don't, like, when my wife has her medical appointments, do I know that level of detail? Because of what he was doing and doing the best he could, I was like, I need to be better. I mean, so I totally saw it in a different light. It's like, wow, he kind of set this example for a lot of the husbands saying, I think I need to be a little bit more knowledgeable and involved with my wife's medical and physical health.
100%.
Because my wife doesn't have mental health at all, but I'm like, I don't know all the ins and outs. Maybe she doesn't want me to, of all the appointments she goes to, but I feel like I need to a little bit more because, damn, this guy, look at all he did, and he still missed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would say this to anybody who's out there going, didn't he do this? Didn't he do that? If you're going, didn't he? You don't know. So you stop repeating it as a fact. Mm-hmm. And how about you do a little thing you can Google? You can ChatGPT. You can look all of these things up. You don't have to like rely on the internet to just feed you the answer to the mystery that surrounds your brain when you are in a world where you can have your questions answered like that. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But nobody does it. We'd rather repeat insanity, rinse and do it all over again. Makes us feel better about ourselves. Mm-hmm. One more thing. Rusty Yates lost 5 children when Andrea Yates drowned them during a psychotic episode in 2001. He's one of the only people alive who knows what Patrick is going through. His advice after 25 years, find supportive people and stop trying to please everyone. Yeah. What would you say to Patrick? Siobhan, and we'll wrap on that.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. My heart goes out to him. My heart goes out to his family. I can't wait for this to die down. And I'm sure he feels that even more intensely. But yes, find help, find support, probably therapy with someone who's really good with trauma and understands all this stuff. And surround yourself with people who love you and find comfort and joy. And there's just a lot of work to be done, as you said, about the survivor's guilt. And I will say every family member who has someone who unalives themselves deals with survivor's guilt. What should I have done? How could I have stopped this? How could I have made a difference? And that's just part of it. But he really needs help and support with that. And And, you know, this has changed him. He'll not be the same person he was, but this doesn't mean he can't integrate this and go on and rebuild a good life. And that's the hope I have for him.
Unless the TikTokers have something to say about it. Yeah. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. The links are there in the description. We'd love for you to weigh in. Siobhan's books, they're right here. Nightbird, this is her memoir. Highly suggest getting it, checking it out. You can get it on Amazon, audiobook on Audible. Also, The Minds of Mass Killers available. Go check those out. Robin's latest, It's Not All About Me. It's available also on Amazon, wherever you get pod or wherever you get audiobooks as well. And what?
I can add one more thing.
We can officially add?
We can say it. So yeah, out tomorrow, folks. My masterclass. I have a class on masterclass. Become the person everyone trusts based on everything we do here. How to critically think through relationships and everything in life. So we'll put the links and everything in there. But out tomorrow is thanks. So I'm a masterclass instructor now. So my thanks to everyone.
You're not even having to do the fake TikToks that people make. You're actually hosting a masterclass.
I am. They sent me. I'll post around the promo reel and everything for it. They did an amazing job. I couldn't be more humbled by them. The team at Masterclass is absolutely phenomenal. It's a great opportunity to celebrate them and their skill set as much as they've been kind enough to celebrate mine. So thank you, everyone.
Well, yay. There you go. I can't wait to check that out on Masterclass. We'll put the links in the descriptions as well. Send those links over to Todd and Lisa, by the
way.
So we can get those into the descriptions. All right, that'll wrap it up. Until next time, for Robin, for Siobhan and Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I like things my way, my coffee, my schedule, and my treatment. So I talked to my doctor about self-injecting with the VivGuard Hytrulo prefilled syringe, which contains efgartigimod alpha and hyaluronidase QVFC. It's injected under your skin, subcutaneously. It means I can inject in my space, on my time. It's my treatment, my way. Visit VivGuardMyWay.com. That's VYVGARD MyWay.com. And talk to your doctor about VivGuard Hytrulo, brought to you by Argenix.